in the 70s. So it, you know, when they reemerged in the 90s, it was not new. They had really been strong long before the Office of International Programs began, and way before CEGIS and the other unit that works on the study abroad, GCC, before they began, because I remember A.T. Miller and some of the others who had been involved in the foundation of CEGIS came to DAS to ask our advice about certain, you know, issues dealing with travel abroad.
Wow, amazing. Yeah, I think reconstructing some of those in more detail would be brilliant. So Deborah also gave us the name of others who were involved in study abroad during that time, that earlier time period, 70s and 80s. Yeah, Dilapo, yeah. Dilapo, sorry that we ran over with that interview, but it was really good. I was just filling them in
That's
on a
okay.
little bit about it.
It was very interesting, really, and I learned a lot. I could feel a lot of our energy, like just listening to her. That's so interesting. And she had beautiful stories about experiences in Nigeria, which I really want to hear more about. But it was interesting. Could you share her thoughts? Thanks.
So while we are, okay, I guess I need to touch base with Nisha. She's been looking at the videos, enjoying the view, but not renaming it as we need. So, note to self, touch base with Nisha.
Well, I know she's been working on that GCC because we've been going back and forth on her GCP project and getting that flyer together because she kept sending me ones that had some errors. So we got that, I think, straightened out and sent those out today. But it was like bit by bit. So, you know, maybe now she'll have a, well, I know the symposium's next weekend. So maybe once she's done with that, she'll have a little more time.
Yeah, I think she had a lot of things happening at once to include her manuscript while she was working with you. So now that we're able to compare notes, I see that as the third thing that was going on. And I think she may have had a couple others that were occurring. So hopefully I can get her to not only reminisce, but reminisce and label the study abroads, because I know she's accessed them and she's seen them because she's talked with me about it.
Oh, good. Good.
We'll do what we can. Matthew, now that you are here, I guess I can lead off with the first update. And that is last meeting we were talking about memory and data storage, to be exact. I was able to talk with Joe Bauer this week, had an email exchange with him. Joe is the research and computing consultant who answers to Amy Peters. And what we got from him was an invitation to come to their Tuesday office hours, where we can refine what we are asking for. What we've asked for is the turbo storage. I think I shared my screen the other meeting so that everyone could see the options that were available to us. Couple that with the fact that we had some security access questions that we still need to have answered. So he's going to bring his team members to this meeting where myself, Ariel, and Helen will join their office hours so we can get smart on those options. The storage ask has been for somewhere between 25 to 50 terabytes of information. And we realize that some of our storage methods may need to stay the same and that we have some of our material out on Dropbox. And so while we might leave some of the material on Dropbox, the research material, we're looking at how we can make that accessible to people who want to do research. So that's why the ask was so large, because we do have quite a few areas that would be attractive to people doing research. And Ariel, Helen, did I miss anything?
I don't think so.
My apologies for being late. It's challenging back-to-back when I've got the executive committee meeting. So thanks, Wayne. That's really helpful. I look forward to hearing what they say. I think, obviously, if I was to say, the concerns would be partly the research, the ability to access materials, but also the issue of sustainability, right?
Right.
Not, so that this stuff just doesn't disappear at some point. Making it clear, we imagine this not as a short-term anniversary thing, but as a permanent feature of our department, of our public-facing work, but also of our scholarship and pedagogy.
Correct. Ariel sent me a link earlier today, which I haven't had a chance to register for, but if you have a Dropbox account, please take the right steps to make sure you register so that you get ported over when the migration does happen.
Yeah, no, it's always irritating when they say they're going to do something different, but this one's nice because I was paying Dropbox to store stuff. And now the university's paying for that. I got a bunch of money back once I convert it over. So people should do that, definitely.
So this is great.
Just to clarify, this is for anyone who has files in Mbox, because that's going to be going away. And if you have files in Dropbox, you want to make sure that you get it registered with your U of M account so you don't have to pay for storage, and that all of your files from Mbox get ported to Dropbox, because that's what we're going to be using. Currently, the website has files that are housed in Dropbox because we're able to embed them into the website. So like the videos, the audios from Ujima, things like that. And I think that there will be more information coming out about the specific details in terms of that migration.
Stephen, were you saying something?
Yes. So thanks for that clarification, Ariel. That is in part what I was asking. I guess I'll just leave it. So we have been told already, but we will be told again about what to do in terms of the registration. Is that the situation? Should I just be looking out? I'm not sure if I need to do this, but I'll look into it.
So the thing is, right, so what's been the university's storage of Mbox is going to be all is Dropbox. If you have stuff in Mbox, then you want to, there's a method, a link to convert that stuff to Dropbox. The other piece of it is, if you already have a personal Dropbox, then you want to link that to your U of M Dropbox, because then all that material will be combined over. And if you've paid Dropbox for any amount of storage for you, you know, whatever, it'll be prorated as a credit to you from Dropbox. Right. And that doesn't involve the university, that's straight to whatever, however your payment method is.
Gotcha.
I had just paid for a year and then they told me I could do this.
All right, like, oh, okay.
And then I got a lot of money back.
They did refund you?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because so.
I also have a personal Dropbox. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Great. Let me give you a quick update on a couple things from my end. The fun one is that I did a 5-minute, actually I went over, presentation for the humanities chairs and directors on the website this week, and got lots of positive enthusiastic response to that. So that was great. I played Tar. I played the trailer for them. That's probably why I went over. And I wanted them to hear Ron Harris. I just thought, you know, that was too much fun. And I got some definite comments on it was the best music. So it was the right age cohort for the music. So.
Good to know.
So that was fun. And then the second thing is I actually just scheduled a meeting with Comfort about the materials we've been working on. And so we'll have an opportunity to talk to her and presuming that we'll follow that up with a time to go look firsthand at the materials in our storeroom. So, which I think I will join in because I haven't actually ever done that either. So it'll be good for me to do that as well. So I think those are my only updates for today.
So Matthew, will Comfort be able to, I'm thinking about the work with Kirsten.
Yeah, so let's, oh yeah, no, thank you for that.
Will that kind of tie in a little? I think
So we've got these three pieces that we have to figure out how they fit together. So I did give Kirsten the go ahead, right? So, and to work with you, and thank you, Beth, for, she's so excited. They're just like over the top excited about working with you. So the Museum Studies Program is going to assign an intern this summer to do a retrospective on the Das Gallery, likely to include, I mean, this is for the folks working on it to work out, but likely to include an exhibit in the gallery at some point next year, as well as something for our website. And the thought, I'm confirming, Beth, so if anything I say doesn't fit your understanding, please stop me, but is that this would look at the history of the gallery, but in the context of the longer history of visual culture exhibits in the department, going back to the first house, right? So that's the thinking on that. At the same time, I'm meeting with Ray on Monday to talk with him about his ideas for something on the website that would capture, revisit the work that his team did in the years they were running the gallery. And my take on those two things is that they are obviously intersecting, but they can be distinct projects because the time, you know, Ray's is a very narrow time window. The other one's a much broader time window. Ray has been pretty clear that he doesn't want his gallery piece to be part of his retirement thing, and that's fine. It's fine. It's not fine or not fine, doesn't matter. It's what he wants, so that's what matters. And then the third piece is Comfort and how that fits in. That's what I have to talk to Comfort about. Her charge doesn't specifically relate to the issue of exhibitions or gallery exhibits, right? Her charge is to make sense of our holdings, and particularly the ones relative to colonial Africa. And so that's a completely different set of questions. Mm-hmm. That said, you know, she will, in developing that, we'll have access to the materials, and you know, I don't want to close any doors to her on how she wants, what she thinks is the proper. I mean, that's, and so again, what we've asked her for is a different thing. It's a proposal for how to make sense of all that stuff, that could include. And I've said to her, I hope it would include some kind of maybe a blog. That she would write we could use on the website that would sort of capture some of that. But particularly now that I understand better those, the particularly complicated images and material objects and how we came to hold them, which is that they are not, they came after, you know, in the 80s, right, I believe.
The early 90s.
And that they didn't, the people who gave them to us were not U of M people in any particular way. I'm not sure. I mean, I haven't even had a chance to say that to Comfort yet. So I'll be interested to see how she responds to that. But I think it does mean it's a very different, you know, it's because we've never used them. We've just held them, right? I just think that means that there's a little bit less riding on it in a certain kind of way. Not that we still don't have a responsibility to talk about it clearly, but it's just it's a different thing. So I just want her to give us a sense of what would be the right thing to do. That's all. And then beyond that, there's not much at stake. That's what I would say. So
I think would be useful when you meet with Comfort, Matthew, also just to lay out those three projects like you did here, because I know when she saw the advertisement that I think maybe Beth you sent out or compiled about the museum internship, Comfort was a bit confused as to whether this would be part of her project or gotcha. A different one.
We wouldn't fit on her.
Yeah.
lay her fears along those lines.
The bulk of the gallery stuff is contemporary.
Okay. Art,
not the historical piece. So that's the other distinction that I didn't make clear, right? So that right, because we thankfully have not exhibited those other materials, at least as far as I know. So,
yeah, and it seems like from what Comfort was telling me, the collection is huge, and it's gonna take quite a long time to figure out the term that she used that you mentioned, the provenance, I think was the term that she used, the origins, the way in which it was acquired, etc. So, so maybe picking a chunk of that. Was what she anyway? You and her will talk more.
Yeah, we'll work it through. And I'm very open to her picking a chunk of it as a way to try to address it.
Because Matthew, I think even when you all go down and see what's down there, you're going to get a sense that Des has really had a background that to me kind of almost feels like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. We acquired. Lot of really strange collections through a variety of things. Ali Mazzouri gave us his collection. Mm-hmm. The Baker Mandela Center gave us their collection. Mm-hmm. When people were closing, they scrambled. They were like, oh, Des will take it. For a while, we had a piece of BSU's history. Then a sixth grade teacher came and gave us a bunch of crates of music. Black music. It's like all along the way there have been people who gave us things, and somehow we became this repository of
what's that room called in Harry Potter? The room of
that's the room.
Room of requirement.
The room of requirement.
That's what we got down there.
all the objects across the generations.
I remember.
We need a section of our website called the Room of Requirement. It's just photos of the store room.
Look. Steven's got some. Look at this. Those were original posters from the band.
From 1989 or 88, whatever that is.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you name it, we got it down there. For a while, we had some clothes, and we finally just decided, wait a minute, that's just,
you there know. Is still fabric.
Yeah.
Steven, I want that stuff for the anti-racism task force report that we're about to go public with.
He is supposed to return those eventually to the DAS collection.
I want images of them. I don't actually want the actual, I'm not.
I've already put, I took photos of them, and those photos are in the DAS 50th drive. I have them for safekeeping. So one of the trips we made to the basement, it's among things that I put up in my office. And then a few months ago, when I went to the office to get books, I brought them to show the students in the class and took pictures. So yes, they'll be returned. I'm just keeping them safe. away from the rats and the roaches and the spiders and the
killing spiders.
Goodness gracious, for a while, I wouldn't have been surprised if Shaky Jake wasn't living down there. I mean, it's just everything's down there.
Ain't nobody in this meeting know who Shaky Jake is.
That's right. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
You mean maybe Steven. Do you even know who Shaky Jake is, Steven?
I don't. I want to hear. I want to hear.
I have just aged out. Goodbye.
Aged out. Beth, you aged out.
My gosh.
Tell us, who's Shaky Jake?
He was.
I'm going to let you do this one, Beth.
I know. He was an Ann Arbor legend who spent a lot of time on the Diag. With his guitar, he was like a blues singer that did play Woodstock. His claim to fame was he had played somewhere, and he came back to Ann Arbor, and you just saw him everywhere, and he'd be like, moving on. And then David Alan Greer took his character and created a character that then he did on Living Color that was based off this character.
Oh, because he went here, didn't he? David Alan Greer went here.
Yep.
That's right. So one of those characters he did on Living Color was, wow.
The one who just talked out the top of his head. And he lived across from the main Ann Arbor District Library. And he just was this fascinating little old man who always dressed in like a zoot suit and just was like spout these, I don't want to call them wit and wisdom, but it was, you just never knew where he'd pop up. One time I was in the girls' restroom and he was in there.
No.
It was like, what are you doing in here, Shaky Jake? You know, you just never knew.
Wow.
And then they had.
He said he might be in the basement.
He was like, and he would be at the powwows. He'd be anywhere you were. Really? Shaky Jake was there. And he'd usually have coffee over by West Hall, right there at where Anthro is now, Helen. He'd be at that little coffee shop on the corner outside having his coffee. And people would buy him coffee. And, you know, and then it became, to me, kind of, I don't know, it turned kind of bad because after a while they started calling him like our mascot. So then people started selling these bumper stickers that said,
white folks loved Jake. Them, the bottom line.
And
Ann Arbor white folks loved him.
Yeah, they loved him.
Really complicated.
It was so complicated, but he kind of used that to his advantage because people would always give him money. The frat kids would always give him money. Yeah. And it was just very strange. But yeah, that's why I just said he might pop up anywhere because he literally did. And there was another Dr. Diag was there too before the Econ building burnt down.
That's before my time.
That was... The Econ building used to be in that grassy knoll that's across from Shapiro. We had a huge Econ building. And there was a man who had been the legend went, he was an Econ professor that like lost it. And he would stand out and give lectures to people. And that was Dr. Diag. So, wow. That's
but he had...
Yeah, that would have been my undergrad, Dr. Diag.
But Dr. Diag was previously an econ professor?
Yeah, and the strange thing was it was two black men. So, you know.
Right. Both of these guys saying Shaky Jake and Dr. Econ were both black. That's what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. So how they came to be these part of the legend. And
icons of Ann Arbor.
Icons of Ann Arbor.
They have great names. Dr. Diag and Shaky Jake are both great names.
I know.
We can ask people about them in our subsequent oral histories.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about Shaky Jake is he was everywhere in town. It wasn't just campus. It was everywhere.
Right.
And beloved everywhere in ways that were, you know, cringe-making often. But you couldn't blame him. He was just making right. Some money. Right? So
as it say, moving on. That was what he always said. It was just a little unnerving at times. Because you never knew where he'd pop up.
And you never know what's going to come up in one of our meetings.
But now you've got me thinking, Steve, and I'm going to ask. Tara and Ashley and I have a meeting set up for our first of our alumni interviews with Devin on Monday. Oh, and since she's a townie, I'm going to ask her about Shaky Jake.
Oh, yeah.
With him. So what was that like as a child, having Shaky Jake?
Yeah,
it'll be good just overall getting her perspective as someone being from Ann Arbor, mm-hmm. then came to U of M and then works for CAS.
Exactly, that's what I'm thinking. We started with her, and then the consecutive week next Monday, the 19th, we'll have Janae and Andre together. So that'll be. And they're both, well, Andre's birthday's today. They're 38. So they're coming the next generation after Devin. So that'll give us the early 2000 perspective from them. And Janae, I have to let you all know, is the, as she said, the president of the Stephen Ward fan club. She was, when Stephen first arrived, she was like, you made a good choice. She really, really so appreciated, you know, having a younger perspective, because most of the professors she had in DAS were older professors. So I think him coming with t-shirts just seemed like somebody like, wow, where there are professors who are like this, because they had missed Robin being here. But I think Devin took Robin Kelly. So that'll be, we'll have some good questions. So Tara and Ashley and I are working on questions. So if you all can think of any questions that you would like to ask of our alumni, please feel free to share them with us. We'd appreciate them.
Mm-hmm. So I realized the other update, I should just, say that Tara and Tahir and I are working on, or they're working on for me, a plan for taking the video to the next stage, which we hope to or plan to figure out how to do early to midsummer.
Yeah, that's right.
With the idea that, again, like all things, it'll be at a position where we're comfortable with having it on the website, but also aware that we may well use it as a step to a larger story, or larger, you know, or in a more professionally produced one, if that seems feasible. So we're trying, you know, have it be done in a way that allows it to that's a work in progress. It's not going to be a done thing, but a work in progress that could be used for additional things. And we're so that's mm-hmm. that's. Good as well.
Yeah, that's right. And Tahir and I had a meeting with Danny as well.
Oh, good.
And Danny's on board to work into the summer, and is still really excited about the project. She's, for the purpose of Stephen's class, she's doing a chunk of what will form part of that 10-minute documentary. So Tahir and I have sort of divided the documentary into three parts. The first is the coming into being of CAS through student activism and so on, demands that result in the formation of CAS. The second part is the intellectual rigor and debates within CAS. So bringing in Harold Cruz, Nyara Sudakasa, Cedric Robinson. And the third part is the kind of CAS and DAS as a space of community building and creativity. And so, yeah, Danny is working on that third chunk on DAS as a space of sort of creativity, using some wonderful old footage from the Bentley collection of cultural activities. And so I think that's what she's building for Stephen's class, but it'll also form part of the documentary itself.
So yeah, it was a really good meeting, and I think Matthew, we're on track for July, at least, if not earlier than that.
Great.
Well, that'll be beautiful, because I'm thinking also with that museum studies intern, the cultural component will be very helpful to whoever they choose, because, you know, putting it in the context of why were we having art exhibits in the hallways over in West Hall? Why were we, you know, why would Ray propose a gallery space in DAS? And, you know, what has since become of it, you know, post-Ray, you know, some of the exhibits, I think, Stephen, of like I Too Sing America and our other one that we did with under Taya, the one that the Bentley, when we curated Detroit from back in time, that was a collaboration with the Bentley that we did. So there have been a number of things that, you know, kind of tie the arts with the collaborations that'll be.
We also did one with around Jim and John, right? And their work with the statue. Yeah, did we do one?
Right. Because I think a lot of people lose track of that we had two professors from our department were instrumental in choosing the MLK Memorial.
Mm-hmm. Beth and Stephen, if you have materials on this, like photos, or if it's in the Bentley, that would be great as well as we move forward.
I know I have some in my office. Professor Chafers gave me, which was such an honor, like his whole set of his plans. And they're somewhere in Beth's room of requirement. In my office somewhere.
Oh, see, we can't use the Axio charm, just get exactly what we want.
I know. It's somewhere in one of those tubes. And then we have all Shaquan. Remember Stephen Shaquan? I mean, Wayne Shaquan put together all of our posters from all of our different events over the years. We've got those cataloged. And they're, I believe, in our space.
The fifth floor. Some of it on the fifth and some of it on the fourth floor.
Fourth floor. We put those in chronological order, so that may really be helpful for Danny with the cultural.
That sounds, you know, great. And posters show up really nicely too, to have like boom, 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 a whole lot of posters through the years. That would be really nice.
There's a lot of posters.
Anything from 2016 on, just let me know. I probably have it.
You know, Beth, I just looked. It's the 10th anniversary of the memorial this summer.
Is it
August? And the formal opening was in October because it got postponed because of a hurricane.
That's
so
right.
I'm wondering if we want to do something, an event in the fall, maybe for students on 10 years of the memorial.
Oh, that'd be amazing. And pull in Professor Chafers, mm-hmm, and Ed Jackson. I'm still in touch with him. He was the chief architect. And he gave a talk for us before with Professor Chafers and Lockhart. They had a whole symposium and it was centered around Professor Lockhart's, maybe it was his 80th birthday, but they had a 2-day symposium that we held over in the league. So,
yeah. I remember going to something, must have been that summer before it opened, at the Detroit Center too, that Jim Chafers spoke,
mm-hmm,
at.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew some of the students organized that, so.
Right, oh, absolutely. That was great. They really, really enjoyed that. So yeah, I have to dig that stuff up, but oh boy, just when I thought I was gonna have a, it's never.
Well, it'd be nice to get him on tape talking about it.
Oh, absolutely. The website too.
However, whether it's an event or just an oral history, we need to do an oral history with him, so.
Mm-hmm. And to get Ed Jackson as his student's perspective of the role that he played for architecture students, because where was I just recently? And they were talking about architecture. Oh, in your class, Stephen, the one young man talking about, and I said, you know, our history is so strong within DAS for the School of Architecture with Professor Chafer's presence and his study abroad to Ghana.
Right.
And South Africa. Because I think Janae went with, well, we'll find out when we interview her, but I believe Janae went to South Africa with, I'm not sure who she was with. She might have been with Yazir Henry.
Oh, right.
I'll have to think about that, but I know she went to Ghana with Professor Chafers.
Okay, that's what I said. I remember her going to Ghana. That's what I remember.
Right, because remember, but South Africa, she did the beautiful exhibit of all the gates and showing where people gated in or gated out due to, you know, the post-apartheid era, how there were still all these gates present across South Africa. I know she must still have that material. So that would be something too, Tara, that we have to remember to ask her about. Because Andre, he could
good point.
The culinary history of South Africa. He was finding food all across the country, but Janae was finding the arts. So,
I'll make a note on our interview page, Beth.
Great. Oh, great.
May I ask a couple of quick questions? For Danny's involvement beyond, you know, into July, do we already have? If not, can we make arrangement to pay her for that?
That's the intent. We have to get. We want to get from her, actually, and from Tara and Tahir. I'm to all of them. Projection of the number of hours. So once we have,
but that's already in the works. Okay.
I mean, I don't know if it's in the works, it's the intention. So we're
the intention.
Okay. We're not going to ask her to volunteer. That.
Okay. And just please do know that Danny has been admitted to the master's program at School of Ed. And so she'll be a graduate student here next year. She's considering deferring a year, but I think the decision is supposed to be made soon. So. But I just wanted to know the possibility of her being around a possible interest in some position in DAS next year or the year after that.
Okay, thanks.
So my other question is just a little thoughts or guidance or input for me and for Beth and I, except that Beth hopefully still joining with me, to try to plan the end of semester presentation, the event for my class. About their presentation. So the day we have is Wednesday, April 21st at 7. So I want to see about making it earlier, maybe at 6. And Beth said that, right, that we don't have anything on the schedule as of now. And so I want to put that on the schedule, but I just want to make sure that I'm not missing anything. That sounds okay.
That sounds great.
Beth, what do you think about 6 instead of 7?
That's fine.
Okay. Now, what bigger question of what exactly it is, I just presented to the students is, so this is the last day of classes. It's after our last class is on Tuesday. This is the next evening. And I presented it as opportunity for them to present to the DAS community something about what they've been doing. So not to give formal presentations of their projects, but for them to together decide what of their products they want to share. Mm-hmm. Including if a couple of them are just really, really good and they want to let those people talk about their projects and the others do something else. But I wanted to share that with y'all, see if you have any thoughts about how to frame it, because I gave them latitude of what their projects could be. It didn't have to be something grounded in DAS's 50th anniversary or that history. So the topics, none of them are really directly DAS history. So one person wants to do something on the on Black student organizations. And her vision is over the 50 years, but I told her she'll have to be prepared to focus that. Another one on racial climate compared to her time, because she's a returning student. She was here in the late 80s. And comparing that to now, doing some interviews. Another one, student doing a project on the R&E requirement, trying to make an argument that there should be a university-wide R&E requirement. One of the students is a former student body president, whatever that's called. And so, and that he was wants to create a document that would be available to future student government leaders, which would give them a sense of the struggles around racial justice on campus. So those are the type of projects. So I'm not sure how, and another one is Mike Wallace, the journalist Mike Wallace, 60 Minutes, who's a U of M alum. He gave the commencement in 1987, but there was some controversy because a few years earlier on a hot mic, he had made some racist comments and some people protested it, but he pushed the brush it off. So the student wants to explore that in the context of BAM and UCAR in 87. Mm-hmm. So those are the type of projects they want to do. So now or later, if I should just check in with you, Matthew, I don't want to take up too much time, but share that's what they're doing and what I'm thinking. You know, I gave them latitude to create something. It doesn't have to be a formal paper. It could be some written part, but they want them to do something that's audiovisual. So that's that.
All of the projects are U of M, have a U of M tie.
Yes, they had to be something that grows out of their what we studied and their own relationship to it. And one more I want to mention, one student wants to make a proposal for a class called Before Christianity, African Religions Without Outside Input. So proposal for a class on African religions, which would be grounded in what our history of our historical curriculum. But yes, they're all U of M, all dealing with race, Black people's presence on campus and so forth.
So, I mean, a couple of, I think we should, you know, definitely record this.
Okay.
Right. So, and we can archive it and probably need their permission to do that. But the other way I would approach it, which is somewhat different, but not mutually exclusive, is I think one thing we might want to just begin to experiment with within our own thinking about these kinds of student projects is identifying those that have real potential. Because students aren't going to do something amazing in less than a semester, right? But there might be some that we would encourage them to then do an independent study to really, to bring it up to a kind of level of depth and professionalism, whatever, that it might well be something we put on the website on its own standing. Which is to say, you know, if you think any of them are candidates for such a thing, we have to, you know, I'd be happy to talk about how to do that.
Okay. So I hear what you're saying, that model. For this case, that model won't fit independent study because this is 498, so they're all graduating seniors.
They're all graduating, okay.
Right. I mean, there may be some that they may still have another semester, another class to take. But again, some like Danny will still be around. So as I said, be around, we'll still be here, other things, so that it's possible they could still continue the work. Mm-hmm. So I definitely want, and I've lightly mentioned that, and I've been emphasizing the possibility of this living on the DAS website, but I haven't got it within.
Sure, and it may be the specifics, yes. There's somebody who wants to work on it over the summer to get it ready without getting credit or pay for it. So that's also possible.
You said so without getting credit, but pay could be possible. Is that what you're saying?
Wayne and I would be happy to receive that proposal and look at what our budget situation
is. Gotcha. So what I should tell them is that the independent study would be a route, but I know that for most of you, that's not an option. But I just want you to know that's how the department is thinking, and then let it go from there. If they have the interest, and I think it's something worthwhile, we can try to
I guess what I would say, here's where I would go further. I would say if there's anybody who does want it to be on the website and is willing to do it on an unpaid basis, we would provide them the support they need to do that, including potentially if there were costs related, not pay, but like.
Gotcha.
So I think you can offer that.
Okay.
I would rather for the other is if you felt like one of them was close enough to doing something that would be really useful and wanted to say, could we consider, you know, a set number of hours of pay so that they could do that? But I'd rather that come from you to us before going to them.
Gotcha. Absolutely. And one other project I'll mention is one student's doing a project dealing with Austin Coy's papers at the Bentley. Okay, so yeah, so if I see something I think worthwhile, I'll come to you and we'll see.
Yeah. So what have we missed today? Okay, good.
This is not a miss, not a miss, but another thought, a bit of a maybe long-term for the structure of the website. You know, there were events celebrating the 10th, 20th, 30th, 35th, and 40th anniversaries of DASH, right? Did we do a 40th 10 years ago? We did something, right?
Yeah, we did.
And we have recordings for all of them. So I just wonder if, and the recordings are, you know, uneven in various ways, but I wonder if we might want to have some structure on the website.
For archiving those recordings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and mark them off with tabs or something about you know, the different intervals as a way to do, like what you said, you want to emphasize to the powers that be that this is not just a one-time thing, it's a long-term thing, to combine that this is commemorating the 50th, but it also has the broader sense of being part of our ongoing.
No, I mean, obviously, when we're, you know, I mean, obviously, like that some of that key footage is from the 10th. That's in the trailer.
Right.
No, I think that's great. Yes, we should definitely think of that as part of the project. That's going to, you know, I suspect we should, let's resolve the data storage stuff first.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, like I said, I think see that as long-term yeah. thinking about planning and organizing.
No, I agree. No, and one of the things that we, you know, I mean, this is, again, Wayne and I need to have some conversations about the budgets, but there's going to be a point when the money's going to start to be less than we need, and we need to go back and make, you know, figure out what are the potential sources of additional support so that we can have this be an ongoing enterprise. Mm-hmm. And so, actually, let me say in close, this is a good point for me to say this. So I will be on leave next year. However, I don't want this to stop the work. And so, I mean, first of all, I'm hoping that is, you know, people can continue to who want to into the spring and summer this year. But I'm also we'll have some conversations about this. We'll have conversations about how to continue this work next year. Speaking for myself, there would be, you know, I would stay involved, whether that's a weekly meeting or not, I don't know, but we'll figure that out. And I'm going to speak for Stephen now and say, I'm going to make him do that too, even though he'll be on leave too. And so between the two of us, hopefully we can sort of keep, and we'll, you know, things going and hopefully involve other people as well. So that's where I am thinking about this as it, so that we don't lose the momentum. All right. Well, look, I've said this before, but now I really mean it. There's something going on out there. So please be careful. We seem to be, the governor and the president's meeting seem to be discussed hourly in the press. This is what's going on in Michigan. So it's obviously kind of amazing, but so take care of yourselves, whether or not you've been vaccinated. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
All right.
Bye.